Okay, Senate State Affairs is called to order. It's 9:05 a.m., January the 24th. Present for the record, we have Senators Bundy, Green, French, and myself, McGuire. And we have two items. Well, we have one item, one that's been postponed, one item on the agenda today, and that's the matter of Senate Bill 223, General Obligation Bonds for a Crime Lab. And we've got a presentation that we're going to hear from today. We have Oren Dim and Matt Tanaka here to talk to us about the crime lab and a presentation. And for anyone who might be online or in the audience for House Bill number 101, Uniform Traffic Laws, that has been postponed at the request of the sponsor. So without further ado.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. My name is John Glass. I'm Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. And the rest of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here this morning. My purpose to being here is to explain our desire, the Department of Public Safety, to obtain a new crime lab. In 1986, the current crime lab was built in Anchorage on Tudor Road in Boniface. It had 18,000 square feet in it. It was built originally for six scientists and a support staff for that. At the current time, there are 41 people working in that crime lab. As the saying goes,
sorry, it was built for how many? I'm sorry, through the chair.
It was built for six scientists and the support staff for that in 1986.
Total population of the town, that would have been about
10, 14 people at the most.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
As we have coined the phrase, and I will show through a PowerPoint presentation, the crime lab currently is compressed. That's the term that we're using. We're woefully lacking in room, not only for the scientists to work, but also for a storage of items that were within the crime laboratory. Our proposal and plan in, I believe, 2006, the legislature appropriated $4.9 million for the study and research of a location to locate the crime lab. There were initially 34 locations throughout the municipality of Anchorage researched, and we have determined that there is a 15.3 acres that are on Tudor Road currently between our office on Tudor, present laboratory, and the Anchorage Police Department. This belongs to the Heritage Land Bank. Negotiations are ongoing at this time. I have a meeting tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock back in Anchorage to discuss the contract negotiations for that 15.3 acres of land. We're trying to build a building of about 83,000 square feet. If we build a lab today for the number of people that we have in the lab, we would need about 50,000 square feet just to house the present people. What we're looking for is a building that is going to last us for the next 40 years. We do not want to get down the road like we are today and not have a building that is going to last into the next 20, 30, 40 years. We do not want to be where we can't house the next science that's coming up. In 1986, when this current crime lab was built, DNA was not even on the horizon. We did not start doing DNA at the current crime lab until 1994. We don't know next year, 5 years down the road, what new science is going to come along that we're going to need the space. So the 83,000 square feet will allow us extra room and have storage space and other items for any future expansion that we need. The lab is also being designed currently by the architects and the laboratory firms to have expansion if we need beyond the 83,000 square feet. So down the road, we'll have room for expansion if a new science comes along to add to the 83,000 square feet. The current crime lab does not have that capability. It was not built to add on to it. We can't go up, we can't go out. The space alone where the crime lab sits does not allow us to expand out from it, and we can't go up. It was not built to it. The current system, air control system within the crime laboratory, is inadequate for the types of tests that are currently being conducted. I'd like to point out to on the wall here and do a little PowerPoint of showing you some of the cramped space that we currently have in the laboratory. This is the work area for the evidence technicians that receive the evidence that come into the crime lab. This is his work area. Is there any possibility of getting the lights dimmed down just a little bit?
Shalon out there.
Ms. Rini.
Just switch right there.
Did you turn around?
There we go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is the evidence receiving area where people come in and deposit the evidence into if anybody. Crime lab accepts evidence throughout the state, not only the Anchorage Police Department, but all the municipalities within the state, as well as the Alaska State Troopers and some federal agencies. This is the evidence storage locker. I want to make everybody understand that this are not staged photographs. These are actual photographs that were taken on Monday of this week. I was through this section of the laboratory on Friday, and it is just the way you see it right there. There's nothing staged. Everything is right there. I also invite any members of the legislature, when and if they're in Anchorage, to come and do tours through the lab so they can see for themselves firsthand. This is the more evidence storage area within the evidence locker. There's the evidence custodian working at his workstation. I hope that OSHA is not looking anywhere close. This is the freezer for us at the crime lab, evidence freezer storage. These freezers were purchased from Elmendorf Air Force Base at a surplus sale. And that's how we managed to obtain those. This is your high-density DNA storage. We're currently receiving about 1,000 samples a month of DNA coming into the lab. This is more of the DNA sample storage area. This is the multi-use garage area. It was designed originally to do evidence on large items as well as vehicles. As you can see, it has been moved, other stuff has been moved into the garage. If we get a vehicle that needs to be processed for evidence, it takes them approximately 2 hours to move the stuff off that's stored in that garage, and takes them 2 hours to move the stuff back in after they're through. All the stuff has to be moved into a hallway in order to have some place to store it when we're through or during the process. This is the lab extraction, DNA lab extraction. Again, the word compressed, as you can well see. This is the office space to be shared by the five DNA analysts. We have just about used up all the room, and they're back to back. This is bench space for the instrumentation for the cyclers for DNA. Here's our temporary storage area. And this is where the latent prints, you can see three different benches working there. The one thing that is really of a concern to the scientists working there is contamination when they're working on anything, because that is always something a defense attorney will question during a court trial, is, you know, if it was pure and clean when they were doing the processing of the evidence. There is always a question of cross-contamination. And that's the end of the slideshow.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Glass based on the presentation you just saw? Senator Bundy.
I suspect we'll get to it in your next piece of evidence. But one of my colleagues has expressed some concern that, it would be more economical to expand the current lab rather than go out and build an entire new lab. And in your presentation, if you could get to that concern, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Bundy, through the chair, as I stated earlier, the present footprint of the lab and the space available on Tudor Road at our present location does not allow for us to expand the present lab We can't expand it outwards because there's just not enough space there. And it's not allowed, the building is not constructed such that we can add, start adding floors to go up. The ventilation system is totally inadequate for the types of tests that are occurring in there. This crime lab develops an inordinate amount of heat. Now, that seems kind of strange to be in Alaska and you've got a building that is too hot, but it's kind of like the computers building up in a room. And it just won't take the heat out of the building, nor the noxious fumes that the scientists are working with. Unfortunately, you can't open the window either because it's a secure facility, and so you can't let the heat out through the air. So it's just, the studies have shown that we just can't add to that or expand it out to where its present location is.
Thank you.
Okay.
Speaking of, Madam Chair, speaking of, I have a reader board here that shows what the building is going to be. These are the 34 locations throughout the municipality that we looked at. And this is what it's basically going to look at on the 15.3 acres that we're going to, or trying to obtain through the Heritage Land Bank. And then I have the main footprint of where, how the building's going to be set on that property. And then I've got the two floors, mm-hmm. two level floors of what each space is going to be in there that you can look at your convenience, if you'd like.
Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was not part of the bill packet, at least I didn't. I was just flipping through to see if I got the maps and so forth, and so I have to ask a fundamental question. Where will this be located? Where exactly is it that you want to build it in Anchorage?
It is between the Anchorage Police Department and the present crime lab at Tudor and Boniface. If you're familiar with that portion of Tudor Road, where the new crime or the new medical examiner's lab is, then there is the new building for the maintenance for DOT, and then it's right adjacent to that, almost across from the Alaska Native Hospital.
Okay.
And would, if I could, thank
yes,
you, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Fish.
Would there be any further, what would have become of the crime lab, the building the crime lab is in now? What would happen to that building?
Senator French, through the chair, our desires is to convert that into office space down the road. If you, and I believe, have been into the Tudor Road headquarters, we are also compressed there as far as space goes. My plan, hopefully, is to remodel that building, make it into office space, put the ABC board, sexual offender registration, and some of our IT people, as well as one investigative group into that building. With some of the new laws that are coming out concerning the sexual offenders registration, we're going to see an extremely large amount of foot traffic coming and going for the sexual offenders to register, and that would be a good building for it because it is a secure building and would be good for that. Again, going back to the HVAC system, it does not allow itself to be used for any kind of a laboratory or anything else just because it doesn't handle that kind of noxious fumes and stuff that within the, that is generated out of a laboratory.
Okay, further questions?
Just another follow-up. It sounds like, I thought I heard you say you need about 50,000 square feet to do the mission that you can sort of see on paper right now. That's mm-hmm. that's what you need to move. You need to move from 18,000 to 50,000 square feet. I'm a hardcore crime fighting, you know, supporter. I want you guys to have every single resource you need to have, but $100 million is a lot of money. You know, the high school in my district needs help. There's, you know, everyone sitting at this table can find uses for that money in their district to do good things for their folks. So I guess I just want to push a little bit on the idea of whether $100 million is the right number or whether, you know, I'm not buying 33,000 square feet of crime lab space that I can't really assign a purpose for. You say you need 50,000 square feet, but we're going to build an 83,000 square foot building. That's a lot of excess real estate. What's the plan for that extra space?
Senator French, through the chair, currently there's no real plan to my knowledge, and if somebody online have the architects on board that could crane that, and also the project engineer, Matt Tanaka from DOT. But What we're concerned about, Senator French, is that we get to the same situation we are and have been for the last 10, 14 years, that we don't have any room for expansion, and we want to build for the future. We want something that's going to last the people of the state of Alaska, because you're absolutely correct. $100 million is a lot of money. But we want something that's going to last us for 40 years. And we don't want to get ourselves 5 years, 10 years down the road, finding that we need, and I'm going to be back here asking you and your committee for another $30 million to add on, because the now, instead of DNA, it's ABC that has now been developed in some new science, and we don't have room to put it, and we're woefully serving the people of the state of Alaska because we don't have room for that particular science. We don't know if that's there or not, but I would rather build for the future than be in the situation we are today with 41 people sitting there crammed back to back and stumbling over items of evidence as they're walking down through their workspace, ingesting bad fumes and everything else.
Why don't we go ahead, Mr. Tanaka, are you on the line, and did you hear Senator French's question?
Yes, I am.
Could you add some more to that?
Yeah, Senator French, through the chair, this is Matt Tanaka, the project manager. We retained a nationally recognized expert to review the forensic needs for the state with the crime lab manager, an individual that has been engaged with the design of over 60 similar facilities nationwide, along with Livingston Sloan. So we determined that the planning horizon for this 83,000 square feet, our target year was for it to accommodate the needs of the lab through the year 2020. And one thing that we should note is that it will take 4 years to get this project online, i.e. to be able to start moving into the lab. So we'll be 4 years into that planning horizon by the time the lab is first put into use. So the current need is going to be exceeded if we design for the current need now, 50,000 square feet, will be inadequate by the time we even move into the building. So it has to be sized a little bigger. Now, if you look at the translate that size into cost, we've determined that the $100 million is the correct budget for the project. And what we're basing this on is our experience with managing and delivering similar laboratories for the state of Alaska. We've recently completed the DEC's Environmental Health Lab. The DHSS's Virology Lab is now in construction up at the UAF campus. I'm the manager of both projects. We know what those projects cost in the marketplace because we've negotiated the contracts with the contractors, have completed the DEC's lab. The viral lab is in construction successfully, and so we've translated those costs into what we know the crime lab will cost for the 83,000 square feet that we're talking about.
Senator French?
And then follow-up Senator question, and it's nice to hear your voice, Matt. Just for the record, Matt and I are, Tanaka and I are ski buddies. It sounded like the building that you're going to construct would be expandable. That is, it would be designed such that you could add another layer on top of the one you build now, and I don't know whether it would take another layer on top of that. How many floors could we add on to this building? Should we push this idea through the legislature?
Okay, Senator French, through the chair. Along the south side of Tudor Road, there's a provision in place where you cannot build more than a two-story building in height plus a mechanical penthouse. So vertical expansion is not an option, and it's one of the reasons why we can't put a multi-level lab on the current existing laboratory's property, because we cannot expand vertically more than two levels, and that would be inadequate for the size of the site. At this site, what we would do is expand laterally. We've designed the building, and I assume you're looking at the floor plan that John Glass has produced there. You can expand the building out each end, so we've oriented it so that to maximize and enhance our ability to expand in the future. We can also push the building north towards Tudor Road, and accommodate a large expansion of the building. The key to note that if we've sized this building with this capital request for the year 2020, in the future when we expand, it will allow us to go well beyond 2020 and to meet the future needs of the state without our being in the same situation that we currently are in, unable to expand on an existing site. Our site is big enough to accommodate future expansion for as long as we can foresee.
Just one follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so I'm clear, the building that we're going to construct now will not be able to go up one level? Or is it planned to be a two-level building, or is it planned to be a one-level building?
Mr. French, to the chair, this is Matt. It is planned to be a two-level building with a third-story mechanical penthouse to house the air handling equipment. We cannot expand it above the two stories that we are going to build with this project.
That was my question. Thank you.
Yep.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you. Senator French addressed my concerns. I would expand on it only to say, knowing the success of bonds in the Anchorage area in recent history, has there been thought given to an ability to stage the construction that should the public reject $100 million and they would go for 50 or 75? Is it possible to build it in stages, or is this an all-or-nothing proposition?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, this is Matt Tanaka. It is possible to design a building to be built in stages. However, in this particular case, not economically so. If you split a project into two phases, it will cost inordinately more than if you were to do it as one. The building needs to be laid out programmatically so that the different areas, DNA, trace evidence, etc., are all together. So, in adjacent to one another in certain fashion. To simply add on to the lab to expand each of these areas would be incredibly space inefficient. From the perspective, it's like adding a bedroom on the other side of your garage if you need to have a fourth bedroom in your house. So what we've done in sizing this lab is to look at what the, quote, right size is for the state. Not over the right size, but what we believe to be justifiably the optimum size of this lab for a near-term planning horizon of the year 2020, which isn't that far out there, so as not to overbuild and to come in with a CIP request which isn't inflated.
Senator Bundy. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. And just so that I have understood correctly, I think I heard you say that the 50,000 square foot approximately projected lab would be what would be adequate when this project would be completed in 4 or 5 years. And then 80,000 would be needed in by 2020. Is that correct?
The 50,000 now, today, in 4 years, 50,000 inadequate. We will be chewing, biting into the residual 30,000 square feet to get up to 80. By the time we move in, and then if you look at 2012, which is a move-in year. That's roughly 8 years from the planning horizon, so the remaining 30,000 square feet or fraction of it would be fully expanded into or fully consumed within the remaining 12 years of its life. 12 years of building life isn't much, considering that buildings are designed to stand for at least 50 years.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I might, and I guess just to from a PR point of view, I guess I would talk about your building for the footprint of what you need in 4 years or when you would move in rather than what you need today, because it would remove that excess space apparent problem.
Yes.
But I don't work in advertising, so take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think Senator Green.
Yeah, and two, I think one of the things that I would assume that happens with a building of this sort is that it is, if you include all the type of equipment that's being put in here and how high dollar that is, plus the HVAC and all the interior of the building, it's much more expensive than the building down the street if you're building an office building. And that you have an inordinate amount of this $100 million going into equipment, testing, labs, your systems, versus just an inordinate amount of extra space for, I would think, assume the balance, the percentage going for those expensive systems and equipment is much higher than it would be at a normal building.
Senator Green, through the chair. Matt, can you answer that? Because I think we have discussed that in our discussions, and you probably have a better dollar figure than I do.
Yes, Senator Green, through the chair. This is Matt. Yes, that you hit the nail right on the head. This is the third lab that I've managed, and we've had to address these questions on legislative hearings for both prior labs, and their questions well taken. That is true. Laboratories are just inherently expensive. It is not accurate to compare the price of a laboratory, especially a public safety laboratory, with, let's say, a teaching laboratory at a university or any other type of office building, because they are so incredibly mechanically, electrically, architecturally complex that there is a lot of money that needs to be jammed into a small box, basically. It's like an analogy would be designing a nuclear submarine. It's going to cost a lot per square foot compared to an open boat.
Thank you.
On that point, Mr. Tanaka, one of the things you're probably aware, but the retired troopers put on a very popular, it's always standing room only, DNA education course in the community. They do a series on DNA and crime lab education, and they do it both for the public adult level, and then they do a camp for kids. And one of the things I wanted to know if you'd thought about in the lab is any place that you could have, and I recognize there are security issues and so forth, but any place where you could have a teaching classroom. And I'm thinking on three levels: continuing education for the laboratory folks, for your law enforcement individuals in the community as things can continue to change and improve. So you've got your continuing education, and then perhaps the ability to bring in folks from the community. Again, I think it's, you know, educating our community about what law enforcement does and how we're solving crimes is a good thing, and perhaps room for the children's camp or things like that. I'm just wondering what you have in the way of classroom space.
Matt Tanaka, through the chair. We do have a classroom. And it is a part of the lab, part of the program. And I might add that in the future, as you expand the building footprint to go beyond 2020, if necessary, there are opportunities to accommodate change and need in terms of that space. I can't answer to the how the classroom would be used for the public purposes, though. I think perhaps Lauren Dim or John Glass could answer to that question.
Senator McGuire, yes, there is a classroom, and we currently have a classroom in the present lab that we teach. There's anywhere from 30 to 50 law enforcement officers at a time that come in and use that classroom for toxicology, breath samples, that type of stuff that's currently ongoing, and there is a classroom in the new laboratory and new footprint, and you can look at the design behind me here and show where that classroom is at.
That's great. And perhaps, too, this would be the time to put it out that when you get the maps, I recognize they're all awkward sizes, but when you get them down to an 8.5 by 11 or such format, if there was a way that members of the committee could have copies of that, so that we could put those as a part of our packet, we would appreciate it. They're just small and kind of hard to see from here.
Yeah, Senator McGuire, we actually had some printed out that were 8.5 by 11, but they were in black and white, and we didn't really think that you could get good, adequate view on the black and white ones, and that's why we did not bring them in.
Okay. Well, maybe just...
We will provide you with those.
Fantastic. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably as a dress rehearsal for your debut in the Finance Committee.
Yeah, where they have the money.
the rationale behind bonding versus paying this outright.
I believe, Senator French, through the chair, that we have some people from the Department of Revenue that can explain the rationale that made that decision for you, if you'd like to hear that.
Okay, so why don't we go ahead and just any final questions for Mr. Glass on the substantive part, and then we have two folks from the Department of Revenue that can give us, as Senator French said, the pre-show for the real money guys upstairs about why GO bonds versus straight general fund. So any further questions the committee has? Thank you very much. This has been a passion. Actually, like all four members sitting here, I know have had different interests in the past on the crime lab, and we got you a couple new lab technicians and hoping to get that DNA backlog as a result of the DNA expansion that Senator Bundy and others have worked on. So thank you for your hard work, and we wish you Godspeed and hope the voters agree.
Thank you, Senator McGuire, and thank the rest of the committee.
Okay.
Just before Senator Bundy does leave, I'm sorry, just if I might, because I'm very interested in the arbitrage idea. Do you have a plan B? Because I don't have a lot of confidence in the voters passing this bond levy. Now, you, I hope I'm wrong, but do you have a plan B if the bonds do not pass?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, at this point in time, I do not have a plan B. The one concern that I have and that I've been cautioned about both from Mr. Tanaka and other members of the committee is designing this laboratory. The one selling point that we can make is that if we delay this a year, it's anywhere from a 6% to 10% added cost. So when you're looking at a $100 million building this year, it may be $110 million next year. The thing that we're going to have to convince the public on is the need for the crime lab. Things such as Bonnie Craig incident is going to help that in that regard. And hopefully we will be able to convince the public that we do need the lab for the benefit of the citizens of the state of Alaska for the next 25, 30 years.
Madam Chair, if I might, well, and the chair, I think, very accurately expressed my view that I want you folks to have an adequate crime lab and want you to have all the whistles and bells that CSI will give you. And the public has grown to expect. My only concern about the whole thing is the arbitrage idea. I guess I would personally encourage you to think about a plan B, because if that doesn't work, and I know that it costs more in the future, we probably should then have some thoughts about stepping up and doing it out of GIA.
Yeah.
That'll be a decision, Senator Bundy, beyond my pay grade.
Made on another pay grade.
Yeah.
Mine as well.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing to think about, because I think, you know, one of the concerns the 8 years I've been here, I just keep thinking something is going to happen bad. Something's going to go wrong. And because I've been over to the crime lab, and it's just overwhelming. It's overwhelming, the lack of space that you have and the kinds of things you're trying to do. And it was such a joy to have the Bonnie Craig, Karen Frazier, you know, all that work come through in a positive light. But I think Senator Bundy's right that the time is now to do something. Mm-hmm. And voters can be conservative on this. We had some schools that were in tremendous need in past years, and they were voted down as well. So we just don't know what direction. So we should all start thinking about, as we're educating members of the legislature and the public about the need for a crime lab, it's a time to start thinking about where else we may find those dollars for that same need.
Senator McGuire, thank you for the comments. And our lab director, Supervisor Orrin Dim, has taken it upon himself to educate the public, and he is making those contacts. He is going to the schools. He's making it, because that is where it's going to be made, as you spoke. The CSI camps that go on in the summer. I brought my granddaughter up from Oregon last year and put it in it, and she's still talking about it. I mean, Those types of things and activities, I think, are going to help sell this crime lab, and that's the kind of stuff we need to do, and we are going to be doing that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator, and the rest of the committee.
Okay, and I do see two folks from the Department of Revenue. I don't know who wants to come up and... Okay.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Brian Andrews. I'm the Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Revenue, and I sit on the Treasury side of the House as opposed to the House. And with me this morning, I'd like to introduce Devin Mitchell. He's the State Debt Manager and has coordinated the state debt for a number of years for us. I just have some general comments this morning, and then we're available for questions, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And with that, I'd just like to say that we are probably in the lowest interest rate environment we've seen in the last 20 years. In fact, on 30-year treasuries right now, we haven't seen interest rates this low, except 1% of the time over the past 20 years. If we were to do a general obligation bond in the near future, we're probably looking at an interest rate structure of 4.5% to 5.2%. Again, extremely low interest rates at this point. There isn't even a high probability that we'll see interest rates even come down lower as our economy drifts out of this slowing down into a recession. So. Talk of another half a percent cut here in the near future. So from a cost standpoint, if we were to do general obligations point, the cost is very, very cheap. In response to that, too, you might also say, well, you know, obviously if we take money out of the general fund, there's no cost associated with that. But I would have to say that that's a policy call. We've got one of my favorite subjects is we've got about $8.6 billion of unfunded liability to the pension plan that has a cost of 8.25% to it. So you might take that $100 million and put it over and pay down that higher expense with something like this. And with that, the final comment that I'd have for you this morning is, although it's an elusive figure, the state does have some capacity to do debt without affecting our credit rating, and $100 million would probably not impact that state credit rating. And with that, I open it up for questions.
Senator Bundy. Yeah,
thank you. And again, to preface my comments that I want a crime lab, but I've heard a lot of thoughtful people in my district say, well, in their own lives, they're not going to go into debt if they've got cash on hand. And I understand this whole process. A couple of questions to help me understand it better. One, you talk about the long-range debt interest rate going down, but if we're in a recession, our investment income would also go down, I suppose. So they may balance each other. I'm wondering what it would take if you, in round numbers, ballpark figures, to have in long-term investment to get a net zero. How much money would we have to have invested at what rate to so that the bonding is a wise thing to do that actually doesn't cost the state money, or perhaps arbitrage if we're lucky, we actually make a little money. Am I clear in the question?
Well, that's a difficult question to respond to, but let me give you some figures. If you had the $100 million and we were investing that, and just to use the retirement system as an example, historically, on average, we've made about 9.25%, 9.5% off the retirement system. And the retirement systems are invested with a profile of being moderately, you know, we don't take a lot of risk with it. So depending upon the risk profile of the portfolio that we would look to possibly to arbitrate out the cost of the debt, maybe $75 million, $80 million, something like that.
Excuse me. And that would be over the same 30-year period?
Yes. But again, that's a very difficult subject to talk to, because depending upon the investment results of those first couple of years, where you start into the hole or you have very good earnings results, you know, those are all factors that come into play and make a response very difficult to your question.
Yeah. If last week we were into the project, we just beginning, we would probably be discouraged.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further questions?
Just one.
Department, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The level of indebtedness of the state right now, how many GO bonds do we have outstanding? I guess the figure I'm looking for is, what am I adding this $100 million on top of?
Through the chair, Senator French, I'm going to pass that on to Devin.
About $359 million, and through the chair.
Thank you.
We have two series of general obligation bonds outstanding that were passed in 2003. Sorry. So the state hasn't used general obligation bonds very frequently. The prior issuance to 2003 was 1983, so.
Senator Bundy?
Madam Chair, it's not a question, but I have a bit of business for the committee to consider. I know this isn't the Finance Committee, but it's, and again, the crime lab is important, as certainly to all of us, to pass, and I hear likely voters, thoughtful people, having this question. Now, we can make the explanation, and I think make it work for them, if indeed the legislature will put enough money away and leave it there. And that's the rub. I don't know what kind of guarantee. Well, constitutionally, we can't make the guarantee. We can agree to do this, that we'll arbitrage or put this money away for 30 years, and in a year, 5 years, 10 years, the future legislature can say, sorry, we need that money, and the state then is on the hook for all the debt service. And so it's a concern. So what I have, Shalon, if I could, and again, acknowledging this in the Finance Committee, but in hopes of strengthening the bill as it goes forward, is a proposed amendment that would require that the legislature put into our long-range savings account $100 million, and this the effective date of this bill would be contingent on that, so that the public would know that there is the money put away, at least initially, with that moral commitment, that we were serious about this, so that we aren't going to bond and then say, oh, King's X, we're going to spend all that money anyway.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I haven't seen your amendment, okay, but sure. I would caution you that there are Internal Revenue Service codes which prohibit what's called transferred proceeds, where you take money and invest it in a taxable type of vehicle while it is pledged to the repayment of the bonds. It's okay if you were going to say, well, we're going to make a deposit into the CBRF, for example, and it's available for investment and other purposes and for potentially paying a portion of the debt service or all of the debt service on these bonds, that's okay, but you have to be careful how that's mm-hmm. crafted.
Madam Chair, if I might, and this does call for a deposit in the budget reserve fund. Again, available for appropriation, but yeah. I think some very, I guess I would call it intent language, strong intent language around it. The notion that we are serious about trying to telegraph that we're very serious about the fact that we want to make this investment pay and make bonding a logical and sound way to go.
Mr. Mitchell, have you had a chance to look at the language that was just passed to you, and does it conform with the general caution that you just discussed?
I would like to run it by the state's bond council, as okay. they're the true experts in the code.
Okay. Senator French.
I'll hold my questions until some greater legal mind is taking a look at this. My general comment is that my sense is that we're all committed to saving a bunch of money this session, but there will be my guess is far more than that deposited in the budget reserve at one point or another. And so while I agree in principle that we should be, you know, sort of putting away money to take care of our obligations, I think that that'll be done in a more global method in another committee.
Okay, well, why don't we, Senator Bundy?
Well, and just to have, I can hold the amendment and not move it at this point if that would be most effective for our process here.
You know, it's what my original intent was to go ahead and move the vehicle out onto Senate Finance where the issue of the money would be dealt with. But if you'd like to have the department go back and really look at this amendment, I have no problem setting the bill aside and having you hold on to the amendment and reoffer it at our next meeting.
I would appreciate okay. that. And if I might, to Senator French, I think, and I understand, I certainly hope we are saving on a more global basis as we go through, but we've got a public, we're going out to a bonding issue, we're going to a public vote, and if this savings mechanism was attached to the bill and part of the discussion when it goes out to the public vote, I just think it strengthens the possibility of passage.
Yeah, I think Senator Bundy's, you know, hit the nail on the head there too, and it's something to think about. But, you know, right now you've got general trepidation among Alaskans, no different than, you know, folks throughout the United States, frankly, throughout the world, about their pocketbooks and thinking about the future. And yet you have that coupled with a very long period of high oil prices, a surplus in our budget. And I think that the just sort of general confusion that you might have on the part of a voter going to the booth saying, you know, I'm nervous about the future, I'm nervous about committing the state's resources and potentially my pocketbook to an interest rate, a bond off into the future, however low it is, 4.5, and we have the surplus money, why aren't we committing that money now? So I think that he has really hit on something that people are going to put together that isn't that complex. And then the last question I have, so we'll go ahead and set it aside and look for a little bit more feedback on it. On the $350 million that is in existence from GO bond debt, what is the, any idea on the interest rate on that? If it's divided, it was in 2003. Is it only 2003 debt or is some of it from 98?
Through the chair, it's all 2003 debt.
Okay.
And so there were two series of bonds, one for accelerated transportation, which was Garvey,
that's
eligible,
right.
So we can use federal highway funds to pay a portion of the debt service. And then, well, I guess that was the regular transportation. And then we had accelerated transportation, which were state projects, $102 million. And then we had educational projects for K through 12, post-secondary. And those interest rates, I'm trying to remember, there was a fairly substantial premium associated with those bonds that then was used to pay debt service. So they have a coupon that's a little bit higher. It might be around 5%,
okay.
coupon. But the actual yield or interest rate that you would say we're paying is something less than that because we received about $30 million over the par amount of the bonds when the bonds were sold.
Okay.
I have a question.
Senator Green.
What would be the difference in a start date for a project of this type if between a general fund that has an immediate effective date and a GO bond? What is the lag time with GO bonds?
Through the chair, Senator Green, the biggest obstacle is that you do have to have the election. So you're looking at November.
Okay.
And then you have some time involved with putting together the legal yeah. and financial documents associated with the bond sale. And so you're looking at sometime at the earliest around this time in 2009 before you would have money in the bank. You would have obviously the ability to move forward as soon as you had positive results with the election, with Matt doing some of his work.
You could have up to maybe over a year lag time. If you had an immediate effective date on a general fund, and that has value.
Through the chair, yes. And I believe there could be a way of addressing that if you had a general fund appropriation for design and planning work,
mm-hmm.
and then you couple that with a bond issuance, and that really makes a lot of sense in a lot of these bond issues, because you have windows that you have to spend tax-exempt bond proceeds within, typically 3 years, and the design process is much longer than it might have been at one point in our history. We really take a lot more time to ensure we're building the right product rather than building something that's going to fall apart. And so we've found, I've dealt with Matt quite a bit on this, trying to compress those schedules and get our money spent within those three-year windows. So it makes really a lot of sense if it's a project that's supported that you have that investment and then borrow money to fulfill the obligations. And we see that with other projects that are currently trying to get accomplished as well.
Senator French and then Bundy.
I think Senator Green's hit on something that we'd be interested in at the next hearing, and you're going to face the question at the finance table anyway, so you may as well do help
try it
now.
Out.
And that is, you know, what amount of money would you need to get this project started in the summer of 2009? And, you know, how would you split that out from what you need out of the bond? And with a contingency that you don't spend the money that we appropriate for 2009 if the bond fails. But it would be interesting to know if you need, you know, $10 million in general fund money and $90 million for construction or what it is. And that way we can make a rational decision about how much faith we put in the voters next November.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, and I think Deputy Commissioner Glass mentioned that if it's delayed a year, it could be another $10 million. So something to factor in there, and maybe it then, I think, is what you're alluding to, a combination of GF and bonding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, and don't tell finance we're doing their work for them.
No, it's our secret.
Deputy Commissioner Glass, did you have something you wanted to add to that? Nope, just nodding.
No, I'm just very pleased that the conversation is going on.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, we will we'll go ahead and we've got Senator Bundy's Amendment A1 that hasn't been formally offered yet, so we'll keep that in our packets. We'll set this aside and continue the dialogue with both departments and look forward to bringing this back before us. Anyone else that I've overlooked that wanted to chime in here in the audience, online? Okay, and so with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn.
Thank you.